coming up.
You're probably right that you're a victim, but the problem is that story doesn't serve you. If you're a victim, by very definition, it means something happened to you that you had no control over. Therefore, you have no control to fix it. But if you take ownership of everything and you go, wait, okay, like this happened and I'm the one that put myself in this position, then you can get yourself out of that position.
This is not your average real estate podcast. When Sam Newell started his career, making his first six figures seemed like an impossible mountain to climb. Now, he's a seasoned real estate pro with over $350 million in real estate transactions so far. Sam's opening up his playbook and sharing the mic with his inner circle of experts, partners, and investors. Together, they'll dive deep into the biggest wins, losses, traumas, betrayals, and more that have made up the path to unparalleled success. It's time to get leveraged with Sam Newell.
All right, guys, welcome back to the podcast. I'm really excited to be here with Jimmy Rex. Jimmy, thank you so much for being on the podcast, man.
Yeah, it's a pleasure, man. Good to see you.
Yeah, we've known each other for a lot of years, you know, realtor, Utah County. You know, it's been really fun watching you grow and do multiple things. And I wanted you to be on here because, I mean, number one realtor in Utah. I mean, thought leader. You have a group, a men's group, We Are the They. And you add a lot of value to other people's lives. And that's the reason I've rebranded the podcast. Is I went from just talking about real estate investing, which you and I were just talking, like, that gets boring. You know?
Yeah, I would have. You're a better man than me. You did way more episodes on real estate than I've been able to. I think I'm 25 episodes of real estate so far in 7 years.
Yep. I got almost to 100 and I was like, I can't do this anymore. And I got all this feedback of, like, you know, I would spend the last few minutes talking about being a dad, partner, business person, integrity, few different things. And I got all this feedback that, hey, talk more about that. We want to hear about that. And so I'm really excited to have you on. And I just want to jump right into it. You've got a men's group. And actually, I just found out that there's a partner's female queen side as well, but it's called We Are the They. And you kind of came up with that name. You founded that and came up with that name on the way home from a sex trafficking sting with Underground Railroad. Is that correct?
Yeah. You know, at the time, it wasn't necessarily the name of, like, a company I knew I was going to have later. I kind of used, it became my motto for life though. And so long story short, I had the opportunity starting about 8 years ago to go undercover with, you know, some groups, in Latin America, Central America. And we would go undercover and, help rescue kids that were being sex trafficked. And we would go on these ops, and this particular op that we went on was super dangerous. And, but we got the takedown, we did the rescue, and it was just this amazing op.
Wow.
And so my girlfriend picked me up from the airport on the way back. And I'm telling her this story and I'm all into it. I mean, we literally, you know, get into the details. It was pretty, again, it was a pretty scary one. And so I think it scared her pretty good, but she pulls over the truck and she says, "Hey, I don't really want you to do this anymore." And I was like, what are you talking about? Did you not just hear what I just said? You know, she's like, "I know, but it's like super dangerous and it's a bad environment." And I'm just like, "I know, but this is, you know, it's going to be part of my life's mission now." And she says, "Well, why can't they just go do it?" And without even thinking, I said, "Well, there is no they. We are the they." And when I said that, dude, I was just like, oh my gosh, it sent shivers down my spine.
Goosebumps.
Yeah, it was one of those moments. I'm like, that's going to be my motto for life. And so for about 2 years, that was just, I tattooed it on my arm and just kind of was going to be my, you know, just, this is my motto for life. And then it was interesting because when I started, I was doing a podcast once with another guy, and the Money Is podcast actually. And he's like, dude, he heard the story and he's like, if you don't brand that, I'm stealing it. I'm going to pretend it's my story. And I started laughing. And so when I launched my program, you know, coming up here on about 2.5 years ago, I just knew that was going to be the name. Like I was like, this is the obvious choice. I kind of just knew. I said, you know what? There's something more for me. There's something else I need to be doing. And if you remember, there was an agent named Dave Stocco. He got killed about that same time. He was going to collect rent from a fourplex, and he built his business very similar to how I did originally with For Sale by Owner. So
it was awesome.
We knew each other very well. Yeah. And when he got killed, every story in the paper was just like realtor shot, realtor killed. And this guy had like 7 kids. Nobody would know a single thing about him other than he was a realtor.
Yeah.
And I love being a real estate agent, but it was like, I kind of just had this epiphany. I was like, dude, if I died tomorrow and the only thing I was known as a realtor, I'd be really sad about that, you know?
Yeah.
And so I really started this process of, all right, what would I do? Where could my skills be better used? And I knew I needed to do something different. It took me about 2 years to come up with it. I was playing with all these different ideas. It was actually kind of cool in and of itself because it's not like it came to me right away. But what happened in that process, I'd been building up my podcast, The Jimmy Rex Show. I'm starting to get some really good traction. I came out with a book. It was called You End Up Where You're Heading, The Hidden Dangers of Living a Safe Life. And in that book, I really go through the hero's journey of kind of like, people don't regret on their deathbed the things they did. They regret the things they never tried. And so I was getting a lot of people reaching out to me and being like, hey, like your book spoke to me, but like, I don't even know where to start. How do I start living again? And at the same time, me and my friends, one of the things about me is I always put my friends in a high priority. And so I have a lot of great, really close friends. Like, I don't know anybody that has better, closer, more friendships than I do. I really have put a lot of time in. Now, it's at the expense of my romantic partners, right? I've never been married and my longest relationship's a little over a year. And so like, everything has its trade-off, but I do know how to create friendships for other people. Like, that was a gift that I've been given, that I'm really good at helping other men connect. And all my friends met through me, always doing these things to put people in the same rooms. And we're able to create these containers where like the friendships just go really deep, really fast. And so I started thinking about this and I'm like, okay, I need to, that's my calling. Like, that's what I really need to focus on. And so for me, as I was trying to figure out what to do and realized I was gonna do a coaching group originally, I still kind of felt like an imposter. And I was doing a meditation, actually, again, it was like a coaching meditation with this girl named Bea. She was dating Tim Ferriss at the time.
Oh, wow.
And I kind of had, I had hired her partly because I wanted to get on Tim's radar to see if he wanted to be a part of this adventure trip thing I wanted to do. And she's like, Jimmy, Tim doesn't need this. Who needs this?
Yeah.
And as soon as she said it, I knew it, dude. I was like, it's these guys that are reaching out to me that are like, we live in a society, dude, that's more isolated than ever. It's harder to create friendship than ever. More men are alone than ever. More men are, holding in their feelings than ever. Like all these, it's actually the tide's starting to turn on that one, but all these different things, and suicide's 3 times more likely in a man than in a woman, right? Like,
what's the stat? In the 90s, 3% of men didn't have a friend they could call in, and now it's 15% of men don't have a close friend they could call in a time of need.
Yeah, and I think it's like 52% don't have a group of friends, It's like, it's difficult, and a lot of it's the way society is just ran now. It's just very different. We're more connected than ever, but less, there's less depth to all the connections, right? I mean, we know what everyone's doing, but we don't really know how everybody's doing, or don't really know what's going on with people. You used to go fishing with a buddy to catch up, or you'd go to a ball game, you'd sit there for 4 hours and just be with each other, right? Yeah. Or you'd go, to the barbershop, and that's where you hung out, or the local, pub or whatever it was. And so anyway, so I just, when she said that, I was like, oh my gosh, this is a men's group. And the key focus originally was just going to be, I know how to help men create friendships.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted to do with this. And so that was the real impetus for me getting started with this. I said, if nothing else, because I'm like, who am I to tell people how to live? I don't know. People doing a lot of things better than me. And it's not even imposter syndrome in the sense that there really are a lot of people better at a lot of these things than me. But the one thing I knew how to do was correlate the right people and to create the container for change to happen. And so as I started to form the group, I started thinking of the different experiences from my life that had been the most impactful on me. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of pressure. I'm like, how am I going to do this? What am I going to teach? How am I going to create this? And I just took all the best things that I had learned or these experiences that I'd had, and I put them all into my own program, and it worked. And so I got my first group of 50 guys 2.5 years ago, and it's kind of grown from there. So we've got several hundred guys now in the group. I just launched my 5th group of this leadership group, which is a 2-year program now. So these 50 guys come together and go deep. And so anyway, that's the whole reason why this kind of came about and how. And so really what we do though is, some of these impactful moments that I had, one of them was watching one of my best friends call my other best friend into integrity in a way that only a man that had been broken and lost everything could do. Wow. And I watched him do it, and it was like the best hour of my life. And so I was like, I have to have that in the program.
I love that.
So the very first event, we actually made a documentary that kind of shows a lot of this process. If anybody wants to watch it, you just go to my YouTube page, and it's the Watt documentary.
We'll put the link in the show notes.
But really shows kind of some of these experiences. And so when we do this, the very first time we all get together, it goes really deep, really fast. And the guys all get blown away, like, oh my gosh, this is so much more than I was expecting, or different and everything else. And so it really, it's just cool how it's all kind of came about and all formed.
Yeah.
And so, but that's where it's at now. And so, again, I'm on my 5th group, and And then I have a tribe, you know, with different people that have joined that. It's kind of a feeder program, but it also creates a lot of community. We have a headquarters here in Utah. And like the other night we did a poker night, watched UFC. The night before that we were doing breath work and meditation. You know, it's just always something a little bit different.
That's awesome. And I did watch the documentary. You know, I like to prep for my interviews and I feel like I know you really well. I mean, I follow you for years and, but it was interesting watching that documentary. One thing you have these guys do is they stand up and they literally just spew out everything about themselves, what they're struggling with, what their challenges are. There's people from all different experiences, walks of life. And as I was listening to your documentary, I'm like, well, what would I say? And so I didn't prep you for this. So I'm interested to talk about this with you. But I actually joined today.
I saw that. Yeah, I just saw it come through.
Didn't know if you would see it or not. But, you know, in 2020, my life was turned upside down. And I actually had a business coach just recently, Tony Robbins, trained business coach. He's like, Sam, do you have any goals? And I'm like, I haven't had a goal since 2020. I've been surviving. Mm. And so I was listening to this documentary. I was like, holy damn. Like I've been looking for a group and something uplifting for a while. And I joined a great brokerage, you know, Spring Benson. Mm-hmm. And with her team, honestly, I sell like one house a year right now. I started my company in 2018 when I left Fig, and I've sold like one or two houses a year. So I'm not there to go sell a bunch of houses. I'm there because they're really inspiring good people. And yet when I started researching more, the we are the they, I was like, damn, this would be great. I have some great friends. We're in one of my best friend's office right now is his warehouse and rent free, you know, best friend I could ever have, been very supportive. But when I watched this documentary, I was like, damn, these guys are going through a lot. They're bearing all. And you can tell they're seeing real change. My dad's a psychologist, and he talked about you have to share your hardships and get them out, or they will destroy you. They will bring you down. And I felt that going on for years. And when I talked to my business coach, he said, Sam, you've been surviving for years. And I'm going to kind of cap my story with, I've raised $50 million since I left Fig in 2018. Fig was a great launch pad, great, great success, you know, selling real estate with them. And then I had all the success. And then my divorce started. And it was like the most bittersweet, terrible, but awesome experience. And not really be able to celebrate what was, for a lot of people, an insane amount of success. And I still haven't really celebrated. And I felt really bad about myself and the struggles I've had either in the business and things have gone good or gone bad or with life, parenting. And that's one big reason I wanted you to have on the show is because it's, you know, like Ed Milet said, you know, he wrote the foreword for your book. It's so needed right now. There's nothing else like it, your movement and your new book. So tell me a little bit more about the changes you've seen with the guys, because I really want to dive deep on that and why you think it's been so impactful having these guys get together, share their experiences. Because again, I was very touched just listening to the documentary.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I realized when I started getting into coaching years and years and years ago, you really can't change anybody. But what you can do is you can create an environment that's safe enough for people to be inspired to change themselves. And that's kind of been my mantra as far as my coaching philosophy goes. I started thinking in my own life, all right, when did I change? It's not that Tony Robbins changed me, but he set up the room. Yeah. And then I went in and really figured out, you know, what my life's purpose was going to be or what was holding me back and some of these things and these different experiences that I'd had. And so it's like, okay, so that was kind of what I became obsessed with. It was how can I create a container where this change can happen? And so in the documentary, you see these guys popping up out of their seats, just wanting to share their story. What you don't see is, well, you kind of see it, but there's 2 days of prep going into that to create that container, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's a couple different exercises and things. And every time we get together, I do it a little bit different. And so in the program, you know, you have 8 to 10 of these mastermind events over the course of the 2 years. And I really try to make them correlate them all differently so that they create these moments where we can be changed or we can change. Mm-hmm. And so we do that through, you know, a ton of different exercises, things like, you know, hapé and cacao ceremonies and breath work and some of these other things. But each time we set one of these containers, magic just happens. And there's enough people that, you know, people want to, like people have this pain or they have these things they've never been able, it's never been safe enough to share.
Right.
And one thing I know about humans is they will do what they need to feel safe. And so if they don't feel safe, you know, that's where you get people that, you know, go inward and everything else. But when they feel safe, they want to share it and talk about it. And so we've had, you know, we've had a couple hundred guys now go through this program. And I can say with a certainty that every single one of them has had significant change. But what that is they finally felt safe enough to get vulnerable. Because the problem is most of us have been punished for being vulnerable.
Right.
We either opened up to the wrong person or at the wrong time or in the wrong way.
Yeah.
You know, when I tell people like be vulnerable, I don't say go run to Facebook and tell everybody what's going on. Like that's, you know, even on podcasts and things like that, you got to be careful what you share with who you share and all those kinds of things. However, with the right people holding that space and making that container right for you, it really sets up for these beautiful moments. Mm-hmm. And so most of us just need a little encouraging, just need a little bit of, you know, asking a couple of the right questions. The best coaches, they just ask good questions.
Right.
Like I've been personally coached one-on-one by Neil Strauss, Ed Mylett, Erwin McManus, some of the best humans as far as coaches go in the entire world, right? Some of the top dogs. And they all do the same thing is just ask you better questions.
Right.
And, you know, I had Jim Quick on my podcast last week. He had the number one New York Times bestselling book last year. And he said he just asked better questions. Like the first time I ever met him,
yeah.
And he said, what are you excited about? It's just such a different way to get you to make that little twist. Right. And so every day when I'm doing my coaching calls with my clients or I'm going on walks with them and things like that, I'm just kind of trying to ask him a better question to look at a situation differently. Mm-hmm. You know, I had one time, one of the couples I was helping a little bit, and the wife was so upset over her mom and the way she was a stepmom, but the way she was acting and treating her in all these situations. And I asked her one question. I just said, well, what if she isn't capable of acting differently? And I explained that to her and she just lost it. And she was like, oh my gosh. Like all of a sudden she literally could see her mom through a new set of eyes. Right. Wow. I was counseling somebody that left the church one time here in Utah. That's prominent as the Mormon church, LDS church. And she was just going off about how like, you know, her mom and dad don't accept her boyfriend and like how she hates the church and all this stuff. And I said, hey, let me give you a different view on this. I said, you're obviously butting heads with your mom. What about your dad? She's like, oh my gosh, he's the best, this and that, right? But she'd been bitching 10 minutes earlier about how you wanted to give her a blessing and how disrespectful because it's not her beliefs.
Yeah.
So I said, let me ask you something. I said, if you could give your dad any gift, like you love this man, would you give it to him like a car or whatever he wanted, tickets to his favorite sporting event? She's like, of course. I said, why not look at the blessing he wanted to give you as a gift to him? Like, instead of being all up in your feels about it, why not just go, you know what? The win is that my dad wants to do this and I allow him. I go, by the way, energetically speaking, like a blessing from your father, whether religious or not, is going to be powerful. I said, but what about just going, hey, dad, I'm really sorry the other day I didn't let you, you know, give me that blessing. Would you be willing to still give that to me? That will mean more to your dad than the damn Porsche. Yeah. I go, that's true love. It's not selfish. It's selfless. It's like you are willing to lose this battle to help the other person win it, right? And so with our mom, I said, same thing. I go, picture your mom. Like she spent 30 years trying to raise you, doing the best she knew how, the best she could. She, of course she did. It wasn't to you right and valid. You can even, you know, you can absolutely have that viewpoint here. But what about looking at your mom's view and all of a sudden you did everything you could to make this person's life good and they hate you for it. They hate it. They hate everything about it. I go, that pain alone is too much to handle. So a mom will have to reject it because the pain of that is too much. So she has no choice but to fight you on your own beliefs because there's too much pain around the other angle. I said, what if you did this instead? What if you went up and you said, by the way, make a freaking game out of it. Laugh every time your parents try to get you to go back to church. Don't laugh at them, but like make it your joke with your spouse. Like you guys can just have fun with it, right? I said, what about this? Go up to your mom and simply say to her, say, mom, I need to tell you something. I've never actually thanked you for raising me in the church. And I really like who I am today. And I know I wouldn't be this person if it wasn't for the way you raised me. So even though I feel like, mom, I had to leave when I did, it was perfect for me till it wasn't. I just want to thank you for trying so hard and giving me that gift for as long as I had it.
Wow.
I said, and she was like, oh my gosh. And so she did it. And her mom just, of course, lost it. Like,
oh, of course.
And all of a sudden, her and her mom have this beautiful relationship again because she took away the pain of what, like, oh, the mom was like, oh, I didn't screw her up. I didn't do it wrong. Like, I didn't, in spite of my best efforts, she doesn't hate me for trying my best.
Right.
And all of a sudden, you validated all of her. And the gift is that you just gave your mom that. Like, that's so much more valuable than anything you could be taking. And by you know, stomping your feet and demanding to be heard about, you know, your choice in religion. And so anyway, those are the kinds of things that, like, as a coach, and I'm trying to help people just see a different angle, get a new question, try to look at something a different way. And ultimately, yeah, when done correctly, it's pretty special.
That's huge. And I love that you said that, because there's so many people that have issues with family members, parents. And, you know, I learned a years ago, it gets you nowhere. It literally just creates more problems. If you're going to hold that against them, my parents were not perfect. My dad wasn't around after I was 10 years old. My mom, you know, different issues. And I worked really hard at convincing myself they did the very best they could with what they had, even though they messed up. Like, I didn't see my dad sometimes for a year. He was doing the best he could, and he'd had some struggles. He really struggled, and we made up for lost time since I was an adult. So I see that, and that's so important, because you can get stuck on being triggered. You know, I'm not LDS, you're LDS, stop trying to force. Or you can just say, hey, they're still doing the best they can with what they have. They have this knowledge and this belief. They love me, and they're just trying to help. And there's so many people I watch that get stuck, whether it's religion or just life choices. My friend, actually, it's so funny. I laughed. It wasn't funny for him, but he told his mom he was divorcing his wife, and she's extremely religious. And she's like, well, you must be gay. Like, that's the only reason you could possibly ever choose to divorce your beautiful, amazing wife. And they were terrible for each other.
Yeah.
Like, I love both of them. And that was her response. And I laughed, just like you just, I'm like, what? Like, how could you, but she's trying so hard to get them back together. And they've been divorced for two, they're never going to get back together. Right. But she's literally just in her brain, she's doing what she thinks is love. And she's trying really hard. And I watch him really struggle. And he does a better job than I did in the past with my mom. But so hard not to be triggered and not to really hurt people when they're just trying to love you. And
yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was able to kind of, with my dad, do that very well, you know. And he, you know, we had this beautiful night a year ago, almost exactly. And like, it was probably the best night we've ever had. We talked for over 8 hours. He shared things he's never shared.
Wow.
You know, one of the motivations for me for starting this group was, it was the group my dad needed, right? Like, 95% of the time, he was such a good dad, but man, that 5% sucked. And it's because he didn't have outlets. He didn't have friends to talk to. He didn't have healthy ways to deal with his emotions, things he'd never been able to share that he'd held in his whole life. And when I had that talk with him, that kind of came about, and I realized, I'm like, damn, this guy's never had anyone to talk to. And so, you know, it was funny, but even at the end of that night, you know, it was like the most beautiful night we've ever had. And he was, you know, I could see how proud of me he was. He still was like, Jimmy, promise me one thing. I was like, what's that, Dad? He goes, promise me you'll come back to church one day. And I was like, and I just was able to, in that sense, just laugh and go, he's just not, he can't help himself.
Yeah.
He's not capable of having a different response. This is his belief pattern. Yeah. But then with my mom, I tried to go and kind of repair that in September, you know, some things too. And it was weird, man, if I'm being honest, like, she kind of just, everything I said, she took all the wrong things out of it. And it was not how I was trying to portray it. And so I guess I say that with a caveat of, like, you know, it was interesting. It actually, like, we're eventually going to hopefully be able to repair that. But it was like, it actually went pretty south. Like,
wow.
And so I, you know, even me doing all this work and trying my hardest, like, it just didn't go well. And so, you know, yeah. Neil Strauss, again, my coach, he's, I think, one of the most brilliant minds on the planet, but he said, don't expect, you know, the people that gave us our trauma not to re-traumatize us. And when sure. we try to go heal it. And so sometimes there has to just be this acceptance of it. And I'm trying to get to that too. And, but it's beautiful, man. It's beautiful to just kind of be like, you know what? Yeah. She's probably not able to ever act any differently.
Yep.
And so I can release the expectation of that. And by releasing the expectation, I release any pain that's associated with it.
I love that. And it's, you know, what's interesting is when we apologize or try to fix something, a lot of us get stuck on really demanding the other person meet us halfway. And it's very rare that that actually is going to happen. A lot of people don't have the capacity.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've gotten stuck in that as well. Hey, you know, my current girlfriend, it's like, no, I apologize. You got to freaking, like, meet me halfway. And there's times when I can't meet her halfway. Like, I'm just not getting there. And that's probably one of the biggest things for our relationship. We've been dating almost 3 years now. And it's like, you know what? You've got to be able to apologize without expectation.
Yeah.
And it's not about meeting in the middle. It's about doing your part and then loving them. And you have boundaries, so you can't be with someone that mistreats you. But I now realize there's things that just don't work for her. She's probably not going to apologize about that or meet me halfway.
Something that I've really embraced recently is like, just because something isn't how it used to be doesn't mean it's wrong now. I think a lot of times we want to put something being right or wrong, like a relationship, for example, right? Like you date somebody for a certain amount of time and then it falls apart. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, I guess that was a bad relationship. Or I guess it didn't work. It's like, no, like we were perfect teachers for each other, right? Or whatever that might look like. It was cool. I got in that, you know, yesterday I made a post on my Instagram. It's been 4 years. I got in a really bad wreck.
Right.
4 years ago. It was, you know, I was coming home.
Barely walked away, right?
I mean, it was crazy, dude. I was coming home on the freeway. Thankfully, I was in my truck and I was with my girlfriend at the time. And a car had got drunk and parked in the middle of the lane on the freeway.
Whoa.
And I didn't see it because the car in front of me swerved at the last second. So I didn't hit the car till I didn't see the car till I hit it. I didn't even know what I hit. If I was like, I hit an invisible pole. And anyway, long story short, we ended up walking away from it. The truck was just mashed and totaled. And, but my girlfriend at the time had to get 8 surgeries out of it. I was good. I get, you know, these like neck pains every now and then, but otherwise, so I was just glad we were alive. Anyway, so the reason I brought that up though is yesterday, because it was the anniversary of that, and we're friends now, but we don't really talk, but we're friends, and there's so much love there. And I sent her the picture. I was like, crazy, it's been 4 years. And she sent me back this really beautiful thing about how, you know, she said, I'm so grateful for this because as hard as the recovery was, she's like, I had to allow people to take care of me and help me. And it was the only thing. She goes, I think you're the only guy that ever would have helped me get out. And she was in her masculine and got into her feminine. She said, I think you're the only guy that ever could have done that for me. And there's no greater gift than being where I'm at now with this. And it's because I just wouldn't let her take on the masculine with me. I'm just like, a masculine guy's never going to do that. You know what I mean? And so, you know, and there were some things she really helped me with. And so it was just this mutual love for like the lessons we gave each other. Mm-hmm. It doesn't need to be any different. And I remember like having a good year where I was pretty bitter after that breakup. Yeah. And I was actually doing an ayahuasca ceremony and I went into it and I went, cause I'd done it before and I knew, you know, it forces you to look at things that you need to. Mm-hmm. And I remember going into it thinking to myself like, okay, I'm not going to look at that. I don't care about that.
Yeah.
And oh my gosh, it's right in front of me the whole night. And I had this beautiful gift that was like, Jimmy, that person tried to love you more than anybody that you've ever dated. They weren't able to, they were broken, like with their own things they were dealing with, but nobody's ever tried to love you more than that. And it became this instant love and acceptance of what it was. Mm-hmm. And like from that day forward, I've only had these beautiful feelings about that experience. And I can look at everything that way now, right? Like,
that's so hard.
You go hear somebody speak from a stage though, right? What are they talking about? They're not talking about all the good times. They're talking about the, you know, the hard times they go through. You started this podcast, you immediately wanted to be heard about the things that were the biggest struggle because it's the thing that, you know, has given you the most purpose and strength and all these things. And so, you know, we want pain or we want growth, but we don't realize that like pain only is the thing that causes you to grow. Like when you go to the gym, it's very obvious. I lift weights, it hurts, but I like it because I know I'm going to grow muscles. Well, it's the same way in every aspect of life. That pain is where we grow. And so really being able to embrace that, I think, is one of the keys. I have a saying that like, you know, like all pain in life is from unmet expectations. And if we can just embrace life as this beautiful mess, then there's no pain. There's just lessons that we get along the way. Look, like Tony Robbins says this all the time, but he's like, you're probably right that you're a victim, but the problem is that story doesn't serve you. And he's like, people will try so hard to hang on to their victim story because it gives them significance, right? And it really screws them up because the problem is if you're a victim, by very definition, it means something happened to you that you had no control over. Therefore, you have no control to fix it. But if you take ownership of everything and you go, wait, okay, like this happened and I'm the one that put myself in this position, then you can get yourself out of that position. And so it's very empowering. And that's the whole beauty of the, you know, taking ownership of things. So Jocko Willink, that's this whole thing, right? Extreme ownership. But really it's all about that. It's just simply like, you know, nowadays people want to blame everything outside of their own selves. And what it is really is, look, if you're not happy with your life or if something's not going the way you want, there's two options. Option number one is make everything else wrong. Make the system wrong, make the people wrong. Have you ever been in an Uber? That guy has the reason why he got screwed, right? Yeah. Like they're either like, you know, an immigrant who's working their ass off and kicking butt, or there are some white guy in his 60s that's like bitching about how the system screwed him. Like this is the two things. And
that's strangely accurate.
Yeah, it's like every Uber I've ever been in. But like people have these, you know, reasons why. But like when you just go, wait, like I'm going to take, you know, control of this. It's like, I'm the reason why this is happening. Then you have the power to change it. And so it's really empowering. And so I just try to help people know, like, look, you're the architect of your life. Subconsciously, you might be doing things you don't want to be doing, but you are the reason your life is where it is. And so ultimately, when you have that knowledge, then you can do something about it.
Yeah. And the other quote I really liked is, you're stuck because you're not willing to do the work to get unstuck. And I think I framed it a little differently, but that's really true. You know, I've been stuck for the last 3 years and I've seen huge success, but I felt stuck. And there's a few things that I just haven't been willing to do. Number one was get to the gym at 5:30 a.m. like I did for years. You know, I did that for years and years and years. And that's one of the things that I did to build my business and be successful is get to the gym and get to the office by 7 a.m. I haven't been willing to do that for a long time. And so believing our own story and blaming outsiders rather than being willing to do the work to change the situation that we're in. And that's really the difference. You're talking about Uber drivers. I have a friend who he's a handyman for me, and he's got a story about everyone that screwed him in life. And while that could be true, he could be doing so much more because he's a brilliant guy, yeah. Super smart and talented, yet his reasons are all other people screwing him over.
Yeah, I had one of the guys I'm coaching, you know, he kind of fell backwards in some stuff, and he started going this whole story about his youth. And I've heard the story 5 times, like, and it's a shit story. Like, it sucks. Yeah. Like, that dude absolutely had a shitty childhood. But I was, you know, and I've seen kind of Tony do this a little bit with people and in his events and things like that. But basically just said, I said, dude, stop. Like, this is pathetic. How much longer do you want to play that story? Yeah. How much longer do you want to live with that story that's holding you back? Dude, I saw this in real estate one time. There was a guy, and by the way, like, it shocked that dude's system. He's been sober for 10 months and he's crushing it. Like, he's in the best shape of his life. His family's doing well. His work's doing well. Like, he's really, you know, doing awesome. But it's because he quit relying on that story. And people will let you stay in your story. Like,
yeah.
Because like, people will tell you why this, and people give him sympathy or empathy and all these things. And sometimes you need that. But sometimes you need somebody to just smack you and go, dude, how much longer do you want to play this freaking story?
Yeah.
And so anyway, there was a guy, this story, I was at the gym. This has been a couple of years now, but I was at the gym. He's a real estate agent. Dude, he was because you were with Remax for a time, right? Mm-hmm. He was the #5 Remax agent in the country at one point.
Oh, wow.
And I mean, he sold huge swaths land, was just crushing it. Well, dude, when the real estate market tanked, he lost all of his money, like in 08, 09. Mm-hmm. And then he got a divorce. And anyway, he had come over to Keller Williams where I was. And I was the first agent in, last one to leave most days. So I was the only one that knew this, but he was sleeping at the office many nights.
Wow.
And, you know, I remember I ran into the gym 5 years after this. And I was just like, hey, dude, how you been? And it was like 7 years later, I think. And he's like, you know, not great. I was like, well, what's going on? He's like, oh, you know, it's been hard with, you know, the market collapsed and then, you know, went through my divorce. And I was like, wait, what? I was like, bro, that was 7 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And he goes, well, yeah, it was really hard. I was like, dude, get your shit together. Like, it's been 7 years. Yeah. Like, grit is like, how long does it take you to recover from something? And like, you have to work on that. Like, you have to be willing to go, you know what? Yeah, I'm not going to play in this field, you know?
Yeah.
Had the opportunity to be around some pretty damn cool ass people lately, like, you know, with the podcast and the speaking I'm doing, everything I'm doing. And they all have the same thing in common, dude. They just are willing to take a lot of action.
Yeah.
And they don't get caught up in whether it works or not. They're just do the thing. So like when you just do the thing over and over, I got in a little bit of a lull a couple of months ago, if I'm being honest. And it was cool because what pulled me out was the stuff I teach. It was my habits. It was, I was still going on a walk every morning with one of the guys that I coach. I was going to the gym every day. I was still doing these little habits. So even though I was kind of just in a bad spot, it pulled me out of it by keeping those habits in place. Cause it's the little decisions every day. It's those little things like you talked about. It's getting up, it's going to the gym. It's not taking a shot when you can have, you know, a water instead. It's like these little decisions, but they add up. And you make 20 different little decisions in a day, you just went from a totally unproductive day to feeling pretty damn good about yourself. And confidence comes from having evidence that you do what you say you're going to do. When you say you're going to do those things and you do them, you get more confident and all of a sudden everything changes.
I love that. I actually sent accountability with two of my buddies. I wrote them a $500 check. And I was like, you know, because I was getting to the gym at like 7 p.m. at night, which it doesn't work. Like I have kids, I have appointments. And I just
see, for me, that's like the perfect time to go to the gym. It's like when I'm done it. For the day, but I'm a single guy. Yeah. Right. So it's like,
but you know, my girlfriend has four kids and I have two, like it's full house.
Time to go to the gym. Yeah.
So I wrote him a check, and dude, just the last month, I'm like, wow, I feel so much more productive. I don't feel bigger. I actually broke my arm 3 weeks ago. So I've only been doing legs, mountain biking, showing off for the kids, on a kid's jump, really embarrassing.
This will get you, bro.
But doing legs every, like, just getting to the gym has changed everything. But I want to go back to something, because it really hit home when you were talking about it. There's a story that Zig Ziglar talks about this alcoholic who had twin boys.
Mm-hmm.
And one boy became an alcoholic. And his reason was, well, my dad was an alcoholic, so I became an alcoholic. And the other boy became a very successful businessman. He said, well, I had to become successful because my dad was an alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
And so the whole reason, and again, I'm really excited to join your group and We Are the They, because I've known for a very long time, I will become like the people that I spend time with. And I don't want to spend time with the people that listen to my BS stories.
Mm.
And so I've got a group of friends that will absolutely coddle me and want to hear about this and that and why I shouldn't be successful. And I don't want to hang out with them as much. I want to hang out with the people who are going somewhere, who exactly what you said, like, dude, it's been 7 years. Like, when are you going to get over this? Like, I want people to say that stuff to me, and I want to be uplifted. And, you know, the other reason I really like what you do is Zig Ziglar also said, you can have anything you want in life if you help enough other people get what they want.
Yeah.
And that's really important. And that's a really deep quote, because it's not like you're going to get rich. But what I think Ziglar, you may make a bunch of money doing things and helping others. But what Zig also meant is you will be really happy if you're helping others. And in this group, I noticed We Are the They, you're validating others, you're supporting others, you're loving others. And when I see unhappy people, usually the one thing I see in common is they're focused on themselves, their stories, and what they need, not helping others.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's been one of my favorite quotes since the day I heard it 20 something years. You know, it's so true in all aspects of life, man. Mm-hmm. And by the way, it's just a fun way to live. Like, you know, I changed my whole real estate group years and years and years ago to just, how can I create the most value for my clients? And so I would do a lot of client events, and I do a lot of just feedback or give back and these different things and service. And ultimately, not only did it bring me in a lot of business, but it also just was a really fun way to do business. You know, I built my career for sale by owners. I'm like, man, that's hard business.
That's hard.
That's grinding, you know? But you start moving into what I was doing after, and oh my gosh, it was a dream, you know? And like now, yeah, it's just on steroids. And so it's like, you know, it's the gift of all of this that I'm doing is I'm growing the most, I'm learning the most, and I get to get the rewards of getting the text messages from the guys and the, you know, the testimonials. And there really is, it really has changed their lives, and it's helping them be better husbands, better fathers, better friends, better sons, all these things. And so for me, it's been really cool, and it's very rewarding. It's the hardest work I've ever done, if I'm being honest. You're dealing with just human beings that make a lot of mistakes and do a lot of things, and it's stressful, but I just love doing it for that very reason.
I was going to ask you, have you seen your own happiness and fulfillment increase by quite a bit since you started the group?
Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, the ability to, and I don't even know if it's like my happiness increased, because I was already like in a pretty good spot, but I think having more purpose, it just is just a different feeling. It's just like the purpose is so much greater. It's so much outside of myself.
Yeah. You mentioned making millions selling real estate was like, cool, I just made a huge check, 7-figure check. What's fulfilling though is helping others.
Yeah.
And I've, you know, and it's what's interesting is
what it's done too. I want to just throw this in there. Like what it's really done is like, you know, you go through your life and you're like, did I do it right? Did I make the right choices? Does my life matter? What's my purpose? And dude, I've had so many of these perfect moments with this group where it's just like the most perfect experience, perfect moment. Somebody had the breakthrough of a lifetime, their life will forever change. And I just really focus on those moments, because those perfect moments remind me that like all the pain I went through, all the decisions I made, it was all validated, because it led to this perfect moment in time where I get to do this now and I get to help these people now. And all of a sudden it like heals retroactively all the pain from the past, because you're like, God, it was all to get me to this place where I can do this. And so it's really beautiful. So what it's really done is it's really validated my whole path and given me purpose and made me feel like, you know, this whole thing mattered. And like, it's just been really beautiful. The whole experience, the whole journey of what's been my life.
I love that. I love that. And every podcast I do, I try to pull out a, what I call a golden nugget or a theme. And I would say today, absolutely, the theme is reframing your past. You can choose to do that. You can believe your own story, or you can reframe, be thankful for the lessons you've learned. And that's so hard to do. And yet you can benefit so much if you learn how to do that. And so I would say today's podcast, we've learned a ton, been really great podcast, but you know, just listening to you talk, being able to reframe your past and use it as a positive. And there's so many people that are stuck being hurt by the past.
When you can, in the present time, if you can reframe the past, all of a sudden it reframes the future too. Because like now when hard things happen, I'm just like, oh, this will be a good lesson to learn, you know? In the moment, I've gotten to the point where in the moment, you're like, okay, like this is going to be something, you know? Like, let's learn from this. And that's a really beautiful place, I think, to get to.
Absolutely. You know, I've got a business partner that really hurt us. We have 500 doors in Cleveland that did not do a good job with. He's our manager. And love him to death. He's a good person. He's going through some life struggles. And, you know, we should be making a lot of money on those properties. And we're barely just break even. And that's rough. You know, I worked my ass off. That's cumulative years of my life, life's work, just those 500 doors. And it's affected me financially, but a lot of stress. My investors are unhappy. And we're going to be fine. We'll sell for a profit in three to 5 years. But being able to reframe and say, man, I'm glad it's not worse. A, B, what have I learned? Well, I learned X. If you don't learn from your mistakes, like really, that's a shitty way to live your life.
True.
Because you're just going to keep making the same mistakes over and over again. I want to jump to your book though. So your new book called B1, right? And what is the theme and really what's behind? Because I haven't read it yet. I'm excited to, but tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's called B1. That comes from the Marcus Aurelius quote, waste no more time arguing about what a good man should be, B1. Mm-hmm. And the subtitle kind of explains what it's about, but it says how to be a healthy man in toxic times.
Right.
And so we really go through, it's a lot of the lessons I've learned doing this program and being with these guys and kind of a lot of the same things I teach there, but you know, how to build a group of support, how to get your mindset in the right place, how to build leadership skills and social skills, and just how to navigate this crazy world that we live in today, and how to do that in a way that works in today's society. And so for me, it's just taking a lot of my own experiences with this group and putting them in that book. And it's been cool. It's, you know, Ed Milette was the one when he was coaching me that said, hey, you need to make a book and really take this to the masses. Like, it's not enough that people just come in your program. Like, you need to spread this to everybody. And so that's why, you know, the book launched. And, you know, on my podcast, he said, it's very rare a book comes along at the right time and the right thing. And you know, that's what this book is.
And there's not another one like it.
No, there's not. You know, so I'm super proud of it. It's, but it's kind of just, it's a lot of the same things I'm teaching in the program. And, but it's really just how to navigate. And it used to be easy. Like, we used to know what a man's supposed to do, what a woman's supposed to do. Now people don't even know what the definition of those words mean, right? And it's like, to be a younger person, it really is confusing for them, and they don't know who to look to. They don't know what's right. They're trying to find purpose, and a lot of times they don't know what that even looks like. You see a lot of confusion on every angle because these people want to do good. They want to find, you know, the common purpose that they all have, and it's hard to do because they're getting sold these weird lies and half-truths and things like that. And so it's just kind of a tool to help navigate this crazy world we live in, man.
I love that. There's a lot of toxic media, a lot of toxic, just toxicity coming from all directions. And I feel like it's getting worse. And you know, being a dad, you think about like, what am I going to teach my son? Like, there's so much. And one of the people that were talking about your book, they said, you know, today's generation, they're really blamed for the patriarchy of the past, which was racist, which was sexist. And I'm not racist or sexist. Like, I feel like
men
very
today are being punished for the patriarchy of the past. It's one of the deepest quotes I ever heard. Chris Williamson said that on my podcast. It's brilliant. You know, it's true.
It's true.
There were these issues. A lot of those are gone, but like the pendulum swung too far. And so now there's just a,
well, I was partying with someone like just at a birthday party and I got called a colonizer. And I'm like, what did you say? You're a colonizer. I'm like,
I would have laughed at him.
What does that even mean? You don't even know me. You know, so it's like, you know, how do you respond to that? And how do you go throughout a world where, you know, there, anyways, there's a lot.
Well, look, when you start putting yourself out there a lot, you kind of have a lot of random people will have opinions about you. Right.
And yeah.
People that don't know you. And you hear some vile things. People do not like you. It's pretty wild. You better be ready for it if you're going to do anything, because people will absolutely form strong opinions about you. And you have to just understand, though, it's not about you. Mm-hmm. Like, their opinion of me is not a reflection of me. It's a reflection of them, right? Sure. And so...
Oh, that Jimmy Rex is on social media way too much. That guy is like...
anything. Well, that'd be a nicer thing that they say. But yeah, no, it's just like they can come up with whatever they want, right?
But you're adding value to people's lives. And if you're doing
totally. That. And if you know that, and here's the part of it. It's like when you truly know, then you don't care. It's like, I always say, it's like if a handicapped kid was kicking me, I'd feel it, but it doesn't hurt because he's handicapped. And so mm-hmm. like, I know that he doesn't, there's no anger or vitriol behind it, right? Like, and so I've got some pretty thick skin, but you have to, and you just have to realize it's not about you. Mm-hmm. And I don't have to take it. I don't take it on. Like when somebody comes at me, like I just have a rule. I do not respond on the internet, period.
Love it.
Like I won't respond to negative people. I just don't. Like, and on certain platforms, I'll block them immediately. On other platforms, I want the engagement, because then my supporters will start fighting back with them or whatever. And so, but I don't, you know, I try not to get into the weeds too much on that stuff. No, but it's not personal. It's just not. And whatever somebody's dealing with, whatever their personal experience is, you know, Brene Brown talks about this a lot. Like anytime you lean in and get curious, everybody's pretty lovable.
Yeah.
And so if somebody's, you know, I've never met somebody on the internet that was going on and causing fights all day and they were happy in their personal life. And so like, anybody that's coming at you on different things, they're just going through some things, you know? And
yeah.
Well, it's okay to understand that.
It's funny you say that, because the girl that called me a colonizer, she's black and she had her reasons, I guess. By the end of the night, we're actually buddies. And I don't know why she felt like that was something to call me. I don't know why she judged me immediately upon meeting me. But we're still friends, met in Phoenix over a year ago, and we're buddies. And we'll probably hang out in Vegas in a couple weeks. We're both going to be there. And it was just really interesting. I did lean in. I'm like, well, why would you say that? You know, like, what's going on with you? And she had a story, and she had, you know, her family's past story. And I was like, well, that's not me. Are you willing to just be friends with me and see if I'm a good person? So it was really interesting. But I love that you said lean in and also don't respond and be offended. Let's jump to, I have a couple questions for you. So top producing realtor. Saw a funny meme today on the internet. Everyone's a top producing realtor, right? Like, okay, but you actually were 496 homes. You said you're
left. My number one year was 497. I mean, my average year, we did a couple hundred homes though. Yeah.
Okay. So there's a lot of realtors struggling right now. The market's kind of crazy. What's, you know, one or two things that a realtor can do to really set themselves apart, provide value, especially with the lawsuit going on with NAR, that you feel like could really help someone that's struggling to produce?
Yeah. And you know, it's funny. I actually was speaking in Orlando yesterday to a group of 400 realtors. And I talked about the two things that you need to do in this market. I don't know if you knew that. You probably didn't.
I knew you were speaking.
That was my topic. So the question you just asked me, there's two things that every realtor needs to do right now. And it's this one. Look, you can get caught up. There's always something. It's Open Door. It's Zillow. It's, mm-hmm. you know, Homie. It's like, there's always a reason why the market's going to have a problem. It's the market. Yeah. It's this or it's that. It's like, look, if you do these two things every day, you're going to crush it as a realtor. Number one is you have to become obsessed with making 30 contacts every day.
Love that.
Period. You got to talk to people. You got to be out there. Like, don't be a secret agent. Talk to people about real estate. That's all I did, dude. I did that better than anyone else. I'd have people come shadow me all the time. They all said the same thing.
Yeah.
He just gets on the phone and never hangs up.
Exactly.
Like, dude's just on the phone all day. 100%. And it works. The second one is you've got to become the most recognized name in real estate in your area. And so one thing I did really well, for better or worse, was like, you knew who the hell I was. Like,
you've done amazing.
I did as good as anyone ever has, is just being local famous. Like,
yeah,
wanted everybody to know me. And you can do that today through having a podcast, through, you know, making videos on YouTube, through making posts on social media, going to parties, participating with charities, partnering, collaborating with people in the community. Just do things. I mean,
join a club.
Five nights a week, I was going out and doing something social.
Yeah.
So I got to know everybody.
And you're also, but I would add to that, I think you're discrediting yourself a little bit, because you also are a really good friend to people and pleasant to be around. and you're not,
that's kind of a non-starter though, right?
It's right, like, but you're not out there networking to sell a house.
No.
You're out there networking to build relationships, and it should be hopefully mutually beneficial. And I feel like that's a lot of realtors, investors really fall short, is they're like, hey, I'm going to go network and hopefully sell a house out of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, like I always say, I speak about networking is the number one thing I get asked to speak about. Mm-hmm. And in fact, BYU would have me come speak to their business students about networking. And I always say the same thing. I actually use the Zig Ziglar quote that you said earlier, but you have to truly not expect anything in return. Like, give everything expecting nothing. When you do it that way, doors will blow open for you, but it's energetic. So if you secretly are trying to get something, it won't work. Like you have to, honest to God, be willing to do it. Like, I do these client parties once a month. Everybody knows. I just got a text from this mayor. She's like, can we partner with you this year on your party? Like, I'm going to throw it with the city. But the funny part in all of this is dude, I do these parties. There's a family that literally comes, there's like nine of them. They come to every event I ever throw.
Oh, wow.
They've never used me once for real estate. They've bought plenty of homes between them. It's freaking hilarious, dude. Like, I honest to God want them there. Like, they're welcome to be there. I don't need them to buy homes. The fact that they feel welcome at my party all these years later, they come to all of them. I mean, they're thousands of dollars into free parties at this point.
Yeah.
It's freaking hilarious to me, but I don't need them to buy something to have them there. So my whole point is, like, I truly try to give everything, expect nothing in return. And that was the difference for me. People can feel when you're in it for the wrong reasons or not.
Yeah. And, you know, I love that quote, and we're going to use that as another golden nugget for this podcast. Give everything, expect nothing. If you can do that in your relationships, you know, it's not a what's in it for me, or I'll give you this if, you know, in your romantic relationship, your business partnerships. Yeah. And that's the type of partners I really look for. So in 2018, I started my own company. I looked for partners who were exactly like that, who wanted to build something great with me and who didn't constantly say, yeah, but what's in it for me?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's not how I am. I want to give. I'm overly generous with our splits if we're doing a partnership. And that's the type of people I look for. I want someone that's fun to be around, that's giving, and not what, you know, you can tell it's not, they're not in it for themselves only. And I think that's huge that you said that. So we've got some really great advice. Do 30 contacts a day if you're a new realtor or a struggling or any realtor. That's how I built my business as well. I was at the office at 7 a.m., prospecting by 8 a.m. till noon.
Yep.
And then, yeah, get out there and build relationships. Like, don't be a secret agent.
Yeah, try to just be locally famous, literally.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. So one more piece of advice, Jimmy, you've built this group, We Are The They. Who does it fit, and why should someone join or not join the group? And who is it really for?
Yeah, I think every single man that joins this group will 100% benefit from being a part of it. We build community. Some people came in and they already had deep, deep friendships. They already were killing. And by the way, it's not a group for like broken men. It's guys that are already kicking ass. Like, you know, these guys are business owners, former athletes. I got several doctors in the group. Just like anybody that wants to connect and build a community and have that support, that accountability, that tribe to go to war with, like, this is the group for you. It's a group where, you know, you're going to get a lot out of it, but it's really what you give to it is what you'll get. And so, I think any guy that's looking to up-level his life, to find a group of men that are like-minded and doing that as well, this is the group for you.
I love that. I love that. And then last thing, what have you got going on right now? What are you excited about the next 6-12 months for Jimmy Rex? You've got books, you've got the group, you've got your business. What's going on with you and what are you excited about?
Yeah, man, I'm excited about all of it. I'm excited to meet these new 50 guys. They're going to start their journey. It's cool when they get in that room, none of them even know each other, and they all end up becoming best friends, man. And it's such a gift to watch it and watch it happen. And so I'm excited to get them in the room soon. We're about 2/3 of the way full of this group. But once it fills up, our first event's in like 3 weeks, and getting them all together and watching that happen, it's special.
That's awesome. I can tell. Well, I'm really excited for you. I really appreciate you being on the podcast, man. I want to have you on again. This has been really great. I know our listeners will really benefit from this. So I really appreciate you. Best of luck with your business, with your book. We can find you on social media, Facebook, Instagram.
Instagram's the best place. Mr. Jimmy Rex. That's my Instagram handle. And I post everything else I do on that. So that's the best place.
And then last question, books have changed my life. Other than your books, what are some books you can recommend?
No brainer. Best book ever written is The Way of the Superior Man.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love
and that read book. It. Don't listen to it. It's different on audio. But I actually hired David Dita. He's the author to be my coach a couple of years ago.
No way.
Yeah. It's deep.
I don't know how many times I've read it and listened to it.
Yeah. That's my favorite one.
It's probably second favorite, How to Win Friends and Influence People. Everything we've talked about today has been about letting people save face and really being a better person to other people. And so again, golden nuggets today were give everything, expect nothing. That was really great. And lots of golden nuggets. But again, really appreciate having you on. I'll let you know when this drops, probably in about 5 weeks. Thank you so much.
Appreciate you, man.
Awesome.